ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, the third canto, 21st chapter, verses 35 to 56. Then, after the departure of the Lord, the worshipful sage, Kardama, stayed on the bank of Bindu Sarovar, awaiting the time of which the Lord had spoken. So Kardama has prayed to the Lord, glorifying the umbrella of his lotus feet for its power to protect us from the blazing fire, samsara. He appreciates how the Lord creates the universe in order to awaken in us detachment from matter and attraction to him. Actually, Krishna unwillingly creates this material world. It's not his desire. It's just so we can have our separate world to enjoy separately from him. To have the illusion, actually, of enjoyment separately from him. Actually, we can never be separate from Krishna. We're part of him. It's our eternal nature. But at the same time, he gives us this illusion, this hallucination. He comes here to wake us up from this hallucination. So after Kardama offered his prayers, the Lord spoke to Kardama, reassuring him that, yes, I've already arranged to fulfill your heart's desire. And Srila Prabhupada explains that the Lord in the heart never disappoints a sincere devotee, regardless of what he wants. But, on the other hand, he never gives what will be detrimental to our service. He satisfies us according to our heart's desire, but he doesn't give us something that's bad for us. So then next, the Lord predicts that Kardama will be compassionate in his grihastha life, and he will give assurance of fearlessness in his sannyas life. So Prabhupada described the duty of the preacher, go town to town, village to village, to encourage the people to always think of Krishna. Manmana bhavamad bhakto majaji, mam namaskaru. And Prabhupada concludes by saying that Krishna has unlimited desires, and because Krishna is unlimited, there is unlimited people who must become Krishna conscious. So our service is also unlimited, to make all these unlimited people Krishna conscious. And if we perform unlimited service to Krishna, then we can become unlimitedly happy also. So now, today we're going to hear the fulfillment of Kardama's desire. Swayambhuvamana will visit Kardama's ashram, bringing his daughter as an offering to him for marriage. Verse 36. Swayambhuvamana, with his wife, mounted his chariot, which was decorated with golden ornaments. Placing his daughter on it with him, he began traveling all over the earth. O Vidura, they reached the hermitage of the sage, who had just completed his vows of austerity on the very day foretold by the Lord. It's very convenient that he finished his brahmacharya on the day that Swayambhuvamana came. The holy lake Bindu Sarovar, flooded by the waters of the river Saraswati, was resorted to by hosts of eminent sages. Its holy water was not only auspicious, but as sweet as nectar. It was called Bindu Sarovar because drops of tears had fallen there from the eyes of the Lord, who was overwhelmed by extreme compassion for the sage who had sought his protection. So the Lord is merciful to everyone. Didn't matter he was asking for something material. He wasn't exactly a pure devotee. The Lord was crying out of compassion for him. The shore of the lake was surrounded by clusters of pious trees and creepers, rich in fruits and flowers of all seasons, that afforded shelter to pious animals and birds, which uttered various cries. It was adorned by the beauty of groves of forest trees. So in purport, Prabhupada says, it is stated here that Bindu Sarovar was surrounded by pious trees and birds. As there are different classes of men in human society, some pious and virtuous, some impious and sinful, so also among trees and birds, there are the pious and the impious. So what are the impious birds? Crows. And the pious are the
swans,
peacocks, swans. And what about the trees?
Mango.
That's pious, okay? Mango tree is pious? Thorny bushes, they are impious trees. Cactus grows in the desert. Impious. Your name? I don't know. You say pious. Pious. Lord Chaitanya was born under a neem tree, so must not be too bad. Or it became pious after Lord Chaitanya had his birth under it. Yes. Okay. So his mother chose the neem tree to protect Nimai from ghosts. So that's the benefit of the neem tree. Okay. What about impious animals? Prabhupada always talks about them. Ass, yeah, the ass. Dogs. Dogs, cats, pigs. Prabhupada said this is the impious. Simply dog. Yes, monkeys. Okay, the pious. And there's the pious animal. Cows. Pious animals. Because she gives us so much benefit. Milk, which actually produces fine brain tissues. So Prabhupada says, trees which do not bear fruit or flowers are considered impious. And birds which are very nasty, such as crows, are considered impious. In the land surrounding Bindu Sarovar, there was not a single impious bird or tree. Every tree bore fruits and flowers, and every bird sang the glories of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So these are pious birds, always chanting Hare Krishna. And if we remember, last year we were reading about Dwaraka. In Dwaraka, all the trees were pious. They were producing seasonal flowers and fruits. And Prabhupada said that in modern civilization, they plant impious trees on both sides of the roads. Said this, they think this is very nice. He said it's the only use for it is for fuel. Actually, in India, they'll use it actually for fuel too. You won't find these trees. So Prabhupada said about the. Let's see. This is the purport to 1.11.12. That fruits, flowers, beautiful gardens, parks. Reservoirs of water with ducks and swans playing in the midst of lotus flowers and cows giving sufficient milk and butter are essential for developing the finer tissues of the human body. As against this, the dungeons of mines, factories, and workshops develop demoniac propensities in the working class. So what a contrast we have here, how the sage is living. And the sages would live like this in the mode of goodness, and this would help them to think. It would help develop their brain tissues. Prabhupada says that. You should live in a very beautiful place. It will help you develop your finer brain tissues. And as opposed to the mines, the factories, and the workshops of today, Prabhupada says the dungeons. So people who come out of these factories, you see what they look like. If you go to the West, they look very demoniac. And so this is what we are producing in our modern civilization. So the Vedic civil, now we're getting a glimpse of the actual Vedic culture here. Beautiful parks, beautiful scenery, pious animals. Verse 41, the area resounded with the notes of overjoyed birds. Intoxicated bees wandered there. Intoxicated peacocks proudly danced. And merry cuckoos called one another. The Sanskrit here is very nice. It says, Matta dvija ganar kushtam, matta pramara vipramam, matta bahina tatapam, avayam matta kokilam. So which word stands out there? Matta, yes. They're all intoxicated. All the birds, the bees, everybody's intoxicated and dancing and singing, chanting Hare Krishna. They're having a festival with the birds. Prabhupada says in the purport, after drinking honey, the black bees become maddened. And they hummed in intoxication. So the bees, they were actually intoxicated and they were singing in their intoxication. So this is the scene at his ashram. It's quite a festival. The animals are having a festival there. The birds are chanting Hare Krishna. The bees are intoxicated. So this is what's happening here. Constant festival. Lake Bindu Sarovar was adorned by flowering trees such as Kadamba, Champak, Ashok, Karanja, Bakul, Asan, Kund, Mandara, Kutaja, and young mango trees. The air was filled with the pleasing notes of Karandava ducks, plovas, swans, ospreys, waterfowl, cranes, chakavakas, and chikoras. Its shores abounded with deer, boars, porcupines, gavayas, elephants, baboons, lions, monkeys, mongooses, and musk deer. Well, I guess the monkeys can't be too bad because only pious animals were allowed in the ashram. So perhaps they were trained monkeys, not like these. Okay, in that purport, Prabhupada also says about the musk deer are not found in every forest, but only in places like Bindu Sarovar. They are always intoxicated by the aroma of musk secreted from their navels. So the musk deer are also intoxicated from their smell, from their own smell. It's quite interesting. Where is that smell coming from, they wonder. And they're intoxicated. 45. Entering that most sacred spot with his daughter and going near the sage, the first monarch, Swayambhuva Manu, saw the sage sitting in his hermitage, having just propitiated the sacred fire by pouring oblations into it. His body shone most brilliantly. Though he had engaged in austere penance for a long time, he was not emaciated, for the Lord had cast his affectionate sidelong glance upon him, and he had also heard the nectar flowing from the moon-like words of the Lord. The sage was tall, his eyes were large, like the petals of a lotus, and he had matted locks on his head. He was clad in rags. Swayambhuva Manu approached and saw him to be somewhat soiled, like an unpolished gem. So Prabhupada says here in this purport, here are some descriptions of a brahmachari yogi. In the 7th canto, 12th chapter, 1st verse, Narada Muni explains what are the characteristics of a brahmachari. Brahmachari gurukule vasandanto gurorhitam acharandasavan nicho kurav sudita sarira. A student should practice completely controlling his senses. He should be submissive, have an attitude of firm friendship for the spiritual master. With a great vow, the brahmachari should live at the gurukul only for the benefit of the guru. So Srila Prabhupada, in this purport, he tells us what is the first duty of the brahmachari. Get up early in the morning and do, who said that? Make fire sacrifice? Somebody said? Chant Hare, not preach, chant Hare Krishna. Yes. Early in the, you first you have to do your bhajan before you preach. You shouldn't go out preaching until you've done your rounds. So, Prabhupada says, in the morning, the first duty of a brahmachari seeking spiritual elevation is hutashana, to offer sacrificial oblations to the Supreme Lord. Those engaged in brahmacharya cannot sleep until 7 or 9 o'clock in the morning. They must rise early in the morning, at least 1.5 hours before the sun rises, and offer oblations. Or, as in this age, they must chant the holy name of the Lord, Hare Krishna. Why not fire sacrifice? It's no more recommended. No more recommended. Yes?
In this age is
Harinam. As referred to by Lord Chaitanya, Kalo Nashteva, 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 Gatiranyata. There is no other alternative, no other alternative, no other alternative in this age to chanting the holy name of the Lord. And this is the second time Prabhupada said this in this chapter. So we should take it seriously. The brahmachari must rise early in the morning and after placing himself should chant the holy name of the Lord. From the very features of the sage it appeared he had undergone great austerities. That is a sign of one observing brahmacharya, the vow of celibacy. If one lives otherwise, it will be manifest in the lust visible in his face and body. So when Srila Prabhupada started the Hare Krishna movement, the priests, the Catholic priests, were commenting that your disciples are bright-faced. That they, this luster, this effulgence of the devotees was appreciated even by the non-devotees or the Catholic priests. They're devotees also. They're not non-devotees. But those who are not devotees of Krishna. So Prabhupada says, the word vidyotamanam indicates the brahmachari feature showed in his body. That is a certificate one has undergone great austerity in yoga. A drunkard or smoker or sex monger can never be eligible to practice yoga. Generally, yogis look very skinny because of their not being comfortably situated. But Kardama Muni was not emaciated, for he had seen Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. Here, the word Snigdhavapang Gavalokanat means he was fortunate enough to see the Supreme Lord face to face. He looked healthy because he had directly received the nectarian sound vibrations from the lotus lips of the Personality of Godhead. So Prabhupada also says that the brahmacharis and grihastas in our movement also they have a luster in their faces because of chanting the holy name. And just simply by giving up all the nonsense materialistic activities of our karmi society, everything, our health, improves. So Prabhupada says, the comparison of the sage to an unpolished gem is very appropriate. Why? Why is that comparison very appropriate? Unpolished gem.
Yes. Like
yeah, he's not clean. He's dressed in rags. We see so many people like that, in rags and dirty, but not him. He was different. He had an effulgence. This is Brahma Tejas. Although Kardama was not properly dressed and his body was not properly cleansed, his overall appearance was gem-like. So Prabhupada would always say, we need so many gem-like devotees to spread the teachings of Bhagavatam all over the world. He says, I don't need a lot of stars, just give me one moon. One moon is enough. But he says, but I'm so fortunate I have so many moons. So this is, Prabhupada made us moons. Prabhupada made his devotees like that. So the real medicine for the heart disease, what is that medicine? Bhavoshiri. Hare Krishna Mahamantra, yes. So because he was directly in touch with the Lord, therefore he was not suffering materially. Verse 48. Seeing that the monarch had come to his hermitage and was bowing before him, the sage greeted him with benediction and received him with due honor. So we can study very carefully these next verses to see how the Vedic culture was practiced, how the Kshatriyas and how the Brahmins used to relate to each other. After receiving the sage's attention, the king sat down and was silent. Recalling the instructions of the Lord, Kardama then spoke to the king as follows, delighting him with his sweet accents. So the king didn't speak. Kardama spoke first. He's the Brahmin. He's in a superior position, so he's speaking first. He says, the tour you have undertaken, O Lord, is surely intended to protect the virtuous and kill the demons, since you embody the protecting energy of Sri Hari. So this is, what verse does this remind you of? Parittanaya sadhunam vinashaya chadushkitam. So that's what the kings are supposed to do. And they have this up in the FRO in Mathura, they have this Parittanaya sadhunam vinashaya chadushkitam. Sometimes devotee joke and they say it's the opposite what they're doing, is that they're Parittanaya duskitam and vinashaya sadhunam. Because they're always trying to harass the devotees. So, but actually it's supposed to be the duty of the king, the police, the government is to protect the pious and to annihilate the impious. So from this verse on, Kardama, the Brahmin, is going to glorify Manu, the Kshatriya, and he'll explain the duties of the Kshatriya. So Bhrijan makes a comment on this verse that in this part that we're going to read now, this chapter, beginning of next chapter, the duties of Kshatriyas and Brahmanas are glorified because unless you follow your duty, you can't be raised to spiritual life. So although Bhagavatam is called Paramahamsa Sangita, sometimes these things are also talked about because people need to hear them. We're not all, as Srila Prabhupada said, we're not all eligible for liberation. Some people, they have to follow their natures as Kshatriyas, as Brahmins. And even if we are above them, still we should practice it. We should practice it. So he, Bhrijan is saying, sometimes these are rejected, this Brahmin, Kshatriya, nature, this duty is rejected in Bhagavatam. So we see two different perspectives. But actually, if you perform your duty nicely, then it's glorious for Krishna. So there's no one thing that's very striking is that there is no envy between the classes here. Like we see the perverted caste system in India, there's so much envy. So much envy between the classes. The lower class, just like I was talking to Ganapati Prabhu and asking him about, you know, visa extensions, and he said, oh, it's not a good time now. People in charge, they're lower than the Shudras. He said they're the scheduled caste, and they hate Brahmins. So therefore, you won't get extension. So this is going on in India right now, the perversion. And of course, the Brahmins also, they're also disdainful of the lower castes. And Prabhupada said, this is why so many lower class people, they converted to become Muslims. And now they're converting to become Christians because they're neglected. Prabhupada said the Brahmins neglected them. They did not try to uplift them, which is actually what the duty of the Brahmin, to uplift the society. Instead, they tried to put them down even more. So now the reaction is coming. So verse 51, it wasn't like that in the Vedic culture. Everyone was respected. Srila Prabhupada said that each of the classes, even when Prabhupada was there, they each had their special name that people would call them by. I think the Brahmins were called the Panditji, and the Kshatriyas, they were called Maharaj, and the Vaishyas were called Sethji, and the Shudras were called Thakur. Thakur. Thakur, yes. So that's what saint. Thakur means saint. Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Like that. So there was great respect between among the castes previously. Everyone appreciated the service of the other. If you read, I think it's Ramayana, Ramayana or Mahabharata, one Shudra, he was supposed to plow the land for the king before the sacrifice. They were in charge of plowing the land before the sacrifice. And he was telling the king, no, this land is not suitable. You have to go and plow over here. So they had their own duties and they were respected as such. Verse 51. You assume. Now, Kardama is glorifying Swayambhuva Manu. You assume, when necessary, the part of the sun god, the moon god, Agni, the god of fire, Indra, the lord of paradise, Vayu, the wind god, Yama, the god of punishment, Dharma, the god of piety, and Varuna, the god presiding over the waters. All obeisances to you, who are none other than Lord Vishnu. So Manu is a Kshatriya, Kardama is a Brahmin. Why is Kardama, here it says, or of course in the previous verse, he's offering obeisances to Manu. Why is he offering obeisances to Manu? Yeah. One answer is that as king, he's representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yes.
He's a Mahajan.
He's a Mahajan, Manu. Yes, he's Mahajan. One more reason. He's an incarnation, Manmantara. Also, he actually is an incarnation. He's representative, he's also incarnation, and he's also a Mahajan. So many reasons why Kardama is offering obeisances to him. So now in the fourth canto, there's a very wonderful description of King Prithu, that Prithu Maharaj, when he comes, he will manifest himself as different demigods to perform various departmental activities. This is from 4.16.5. Many, many verses are there, all the way to like 23. So it says, he alone will be able to maintain the upper planets and the lower planets. The upper planets by sacrifice, and the lower planets by discharging proper rainfall. So I'll ask you some questions to see if you can try and understand. Here he's saying that the king sometimes has to assume, or he's like the sun god. May not simply assume the part, but how is the king like the sun god? Adi Purusha?
Well, he makes sure that there's electricity.
He makes sure there's electricity? Really? Yes, that's a new one. Okay, Vanamali?
They like sun is sucking water from the sea.
Yes.
And pouring to the different places. Similarly, he takes taxes from the different peoples.
Yes. Yes, this is one reason given in fourth canto about Prithu. He'll be like the sun god, because just like the sun, he evaporates the water for 8 months and then he returns it as rainfall. The king will take taxes, money from the citizens, and when in time of need, he'll return it profusely. That's one way he's like the sun. What's another way? He's like the sun god. Yes. So how is that like the sun?
Because he's giving light through the Brahmins.
Oh, he's giving light through the Brahmins. Anything else? Yes.
It's not discriminating the peoples.
Yes, that's another reason. You're right. This verse 4:16:6. There's two reasons. One is the first reason you gave, and the other is the second. Just as the sun equally distributes his sunshine to everyone, the king will distribute his mercy equally. Yes, Patri. Okay, just as the sun is powerful and he can evaporate urine, so the king is powerful. That's Prabhupada used to say, the king can do no wrong. Yes. Yes. And this is actually one verse, 4:16:14, that just as the sun expands his rays up to the Arctic without impedance, the influence of the king will cover all the lands up to the Arctic region. So this is true also of Manu. That's so powerful that his dominion is just like the sun. And there's one more reason. Actually, it's given in the next verses, but it's also given in Prithu's. That was 4:16:14. 4:16:20. That he will travel around the globe on his chariot and appearing just like the sun, which rotates in its own orbit from the south. So he will travel just as the sun goes all the way around. So he'll travel all around the world, as we hear in the next verse, and make sure the rogues and rascals will not create trouble. So, next question. How is the king like the moon god? That's a hard one. That's very hard. Patri? Yes, it's true. At 4:16:9, it says, and how does he give pleasure? Just by smiling. His affectionate glances, his beautiful moon-like face, always smiling with great affection for the citizens, will enhance everyone's peaceful life. So the moon god has two qualities. One is Amritamaya, that he nourishes everyone. So the king, he sees everyone as his children, and he nourishes everyone just like his own children. And second one, Sarvamaya, that's the quality of the moon. He satisfies everyone. So the king is like that. And it's amazing because everyone has different desires. So how can you satisfy everyone? One, you can satisfy one person, the other one's not going to be satisfied. But a Mahabhagavata, he can satisfy everyone. A great king. Okay, how is he like Indra? He's like a king, okay? He's like the king. So this is a hard one because it says Prithu, in regards to Prithu, when there is no rainfall, then he will be able to supply rain just like Indra. But actually, it was the duty of the king that there should be no problem in his kingdom. Even if there's a drought, it's the king's fault. And there was one king in Mahabharata, his name was Romapad. And there was a drought in his kingdom, and it was because he had committed some offense to Brahmins or cows or something. So then he consulted the Brahmins. He says, oh, what did I do? How can I rectify this? There's a drought in my kingdom. It's my fault. So the Brahmins, they said to Romapad, yes, you just bring this Rishishringa. He's a very powerful sage's son. You bring him in your kingdom, and then rain will come. So this sage's son was brought up by his father without any mother. He never saw a woman in his life. So the king sent prostitutes to allure him to the kingdom. And then they brought him there, and then this sage's son, he married him to his daughter, Shanta. And as soon as he stepped foot in the kingdom, it rained. So the father was really angry, father of Rishishringa, who was very angry.
So he came storming to curse the king. But on the way, the king had already told all the cowherd men, you plow all the fields. And when he comes, he asked the cowherds, oh, whose land is this? And they said, oh, it is your land. We are your servants. So all along the way, by the time he got to the king, he was very happy. But they were he forgot, he wasn't angry anymore. And he blessed the marriage of his son to the king's daughter. So this is, anyway, the point is that the king is responsible for rain in the kingdom. If there's no rain, it's his fault. Another way that Prithu was like Indra was that he knocked all the mountains down with the end of his bow. You can imagine the size of his bow. He was knocking all the mountains down because otherwise you couldn't have farming. So farming was being introduced by Prithu Maharaj. And city planning was also being introduced by Prithu Maharaj. So Indra, just like Indra would knock the mountains down with his thunderbolt, so Prithu was knocking the mountains down with the end of his bow. This is 4.16.22. So all these verses are very nice. Then how is he like Yamaraj, the king?
Judgment.
Yes, judgment, punishment for the sinners. So chastising. And the verse 4.16.23, when the lion travels in the forest with its tail turned upward, all menial animals hide themselves. Similarly, when King Prithu will travel over his kingdom and vibrate the string of his bow, which is made of the horns of goats and bulls, irresistible in battle, all demoniac rogues and thieves will hide themselves in all directions. Then it says here he's like Dharma, the god of religion. So how is the king like Dharma? Giving... Yes?
Protections to the
Brahmin and the cows? Yes. It says in the verse 4.16.16, he'll be firmly determined, always situated in truth. He'll be a lover of Brahminical culture, will render all service to old men, give shelter to all surrendered souls, giving respect to all. He will always be merciful to the poor and innocent. So this is a king. This is a real king. This is what a king should be. And this is what Prithu was. This is what these kings were. This is how Manu was. This is how Prithu was. So then, how is he like Varuna? This is very difficult. So I'll just tell you. This 4.16.10, he'll be the reservoir of unlimited glories and good qualities. His position will be maintained and covered, just as Varuna, the deity of the seas, is covered all around by water. So he'll be so strong in his position, he'll just be covered just like Varuna is covered by the ocean, and full of good qualities like Varuna. So these are the qualities of the king. We heard about Maharaj Yudhisthira in the first canto.
What about Vayu?
Vayu, yeah, I didn't get a quote for that. How he's like the air. If anybody knows, then you can tell me how he's like Vayu. Of course, anyway, we can only speculate.
He's omnipresent,
yes?
Yeah,
that's true. Just like the air is everywhere, you cannot see, but you can feel the presence of the air. So his power will be felt. Although he may not be there, you can feel him. Like air, he's omnipresent. Yes, same thing. You were saying that? Yeah. So in that sense, he's like Vayu. You can't get away with anything also. What's that? Yes, the wind also cannot be controlled. So no one, he is irresistible as Vayu. No one can catch him or control him. Maharaj Yudhisthira was such a king. It's described in the first canto, 10th chapter, verse 4, that when he was the king, the clouds showered all the water people needed. The earth produced all necessities of man in profusion. And the cow used to moisten the grazing ground with milk. The rivers, oceans, hills, mountains, forests, creepers, and active drugs in every season paid their tax quota to the king in profusion. So just imagine, not only the people were paying taxes, but even the ocean and the hills and the mountains and the forest, everybody was paying taxes to the king.
Where was that from?
Well, this is 1.10.5. Yeah, everybody's paying taxes. Even the minerals, the mountains, the drugs, the herbs, they were all paying taxes to the king. Huh? Yes. So first, then also the next verse, because of the king's having no enemy, the living beings were not at any time disturbed by mental agonies, diseases, or excessive heat or cold. So this is a real king. And even when Lord Ram was here, it said that if you didn't want to die, you didn't have to, when Ram was king. So this is the power of a real king. Because he had no enemy, therefore everyone was free from disease, heat and cold. This is the Kshatriya. Prabhupada says there's full cooperation between man and God and man and nature, and this, as exemplified by King Yudhisthira, can bring about happiness, peace and prosperity in the world. So in Krishna Lila, there's an example of how the king is responsible for everything that happens in the kingdom. Anybody know what story? Yeah.
Brahmana and he lost his
son. Yes, the Brahman in Dwaraka, who lost his sons. And this is what he said. He took his dead son to the court of King Agrasena and said, "This duplicitous, greedy enemy of Brahmins has caused my son's death by failing to execute his duties properly." So this is a fact. If the king, your son is not supposed to die before you. And if he does, it's the king's fault. And you can take it up with the king. So just imagine what it meant. After. Just keep it. We'll just keep going until we finish the verses and then we'll ask for questions. So, verse 52. If you did not mount your victorious jeweled chariot, whose mere presence threatens culprits, if you did not produce fierce sounds by the twanging of your bow, and if you did not roam about the world like the brilliant sun, leading a huge army whose trampling feet cause the globe of the earth to tremble, then all the moral laws governing the varnas and ashrams created by the Lord himself would be broken by the rogues and rascals. So how he's like Yamaraj, how he's like Dharma, how he's like the sun, all in this verse here, 55. If you gave up all thought of the world's situation, unrighteousness would flourish. For men who hanker only after money would be unopposed. Such miscreants would attack, and the world would perish. So this is what's happening today, that actually people think advancement means economic advancement, and the people who are in charge of the government, they're after money. So this is what actually has happened. Verse 56. In spite of all this, I ask you, O valiant king, the purpose for which you have come here. Whatever it may be, we shall carry it out without reservation. So this is how to treat a guest. Another point of Vedic culture. This is, okay, I know you must have come here for a reason. Whatever I can do to help you, I'm at your service. As Prabhupada says, when a guest comes to a friend's house, it is understood there is some special purpose. Kardama Muni could understand that such a great king as Swayambhuva, although traveling to inspect the condition of his kingdom, must have had some special purpose to come to his hermitage. Thus he prepared himself to fulfill the king's desire. Formerly it was customary that the sages used to go to the kings and the kings used to visit the sages in their hermitages. Each was glad to fulfill the other's purpose. This reciprocal relationship is called Bhakti Karya. So this is Vaishnav culture. Bhakti is there. Bhakti Karya. There is a nice verse describing a relationship of mutual beneficial interest between the Brahmin and the Kshatriya. Kshatram Dvijatvam. Kshatram means the royal order and Dvijatvam means the Brahminical order. The two were meant for mutual interest. The royal order would give protection to the Brahmins for the cultivation of spiritual advancement in society. And the Brahmins would give their valuable instruction to the royal order on how the state and citizens can gradually be elevated in spiritual perfection. So here we are seeing two ways that the Brahmins and Kshatriyas benefit each other. How else do the Brahmins and Kshatriyas benefit each other? Sankirtan.
Well, they protect each other.
They protect each other. The Brahmana gives protects the Kshatriya by giving him enlightenment, and the Kshatriya protects the Brahmin by?
By his power.
Yes. Yes, from the demons, from the miscreants, so he can peacefully execute his duties.
Also by making sure the Brahmana is properly engaged.
Making sure the Brahmin is properly engaged, and he also supports the Brahmin.
Yeah.
too. And Kshatriyas, they give. You see what we were reading before, they were giving in charity when they went to Prabha Kshetra. What was it, Prabhava? Prabhasa Kshetra, yeah. The others were giving everything in charity to the Brahmins. Gold, land, wives, everything, whatever they needed. Right. Maharaj Parikshit had power. Yes, the sages acknowledged we're only able to do this sacrifice because of the power of Maharaj Parikshit. Because he's so powerful, then we're peaceful. We can stay here in this one place. Nobody's going to disturb us for 1,000 years. Can you imagine not to be disturbed for 1,000 years? You don't have to worry about thieves and all these things. Yeah. Yes, the Brahmins were performing yajnas on behalf of the kings. Kings couldn't do yajnas without the Brahmins. The Brahmins were the ones who called the demigods, invited the demigods, and so many things, and did all the rituals. Okay, anything else? So this was their relationship. So in this chapter, we're hearing how the Brahmanas are appreciating the Kshatriyas. In the next chapter, we're going to hear how the Kshatriyas are appreciating the Brahmins. So we'll hear both sides. Tomorrow we'll hear how the Kshatriyas appreciate the Brahmins. So this is the Vedic culture. Everyone's appreciated. Everyone's service is valuable. No matter if you're brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas, kshatriya, vaishya, shudra, it doesn't matter. Your service is valuable and necessary for society to go on. So any questions or comments? Yeah. I know, you're waiting. What happens to you? Her question is, it seems like if such a powerful king is there, then what happens to your karma? Yes.
Being kept at bay.
It's being kept at bay. Yeah, he's because that's what Krishna does. If you surrender, see, the king's a Vaishnava, right? And if you obey him, then you're also going to be a Vaishnava. So therefore your karma is going to be kept at bay. It means you have to have a Vaishnava king, and that's why Krishna was so concerned that Duryodhan was king and not Yudhisthira. He wanted to have a Vaishnava king in control, so the people, they would get the benefit of becoming elevated. In Bhagavad Gita, in the 4th chapter, it says not only the duty of the king to protect the people from rascals and demons, but also to protect them from lust. So the king, Yudhisthira, he was such a perfect king. He was a pure devotee, a Mahabhagwat. Parikshit also was a Mahabhagwat. They were so powerful that they could even stop the karma. They could do that. And the demigods, they respect. There's cooperation between the demigods and such a king. The demigods are very happy because they're also devotees. And such a king is in control. And even Ram, when Ram was in control, even Yamaraj couldn't touch people. Unless they wanted to die. They wanted to go on to their next life then. Of course, when Ram's here, who wants to die? If Ram is your king, yeah, who wants to go? Then they all went with Ram, actually. When Ram went, they went. Everybody went with Ram together. So he gave them that. He had that power, of course. He was the Supreme Lord himself. So this is, people don't understand. They think democracy, it's much more fair. But actually, it's not. It's not at all. You have democracy, you have who is in control? The Vaishyas and Shudras. Okay, any other questions or comments on this? Sankirtanas. Bindu Sarovar, yes. It's in Bhuvaneshwar, I think. I'm not sure, but isn't it? Yeah? I think it's in Bhuvaneshwar. And I did visit it many, many years ago. It's not, it doesn't, it's covered right now. You wouldn't want to drink the, as it says here, it's, you drink the water, but you wouldn't, I couldn't. I was thinking about it, but when I looked at it, I didn't.
It's covered with dirt?
Yeah, it's very dirty. Yeah, that's different. I mean, you mix everything together, and you'll get something, but. Oh, I'm sure there's everything. I'm not familiar with all of Braj. Yes.
Because it is filled with water of Saraswati.
Saraswati, right.
And I don't think there is a water.
It's not from Saraswati. Okay. Saraswati goes a different direction, does it? Yeah. Oh, Saraswati, yeah. We don't see Saraswati these days. Okay. Anyway, yeah, it's something to research, but when I went there, everybody was saying, this is Bindu Sarovar. I heard that. It was Gaur Govinda Maharaj was there. We went in 1977, and we were sharing the hut. My husband and I were on one side, and he was on the other side of the hut. And it was just nothing there at that time. But anyway, it was... I haven't seen it these days, so I'm sure it's quite changed. Madangopal, you have a question? About democracy? Yes. Why is it so prominent these days? There's a good answer for that. Ranamali.
It's demon crazy.
Demon crazy. It's the age of Kali. So it's the age of Shudra. Everyone's born a Shudra. So therefore the Shudras are in control. And actually I was teaching my son I had to teach him this course on democracy, and they have, it's such propaganda in that book. It says the kings are all bad, the monarchy is very bad, and they just want to exploit the people. And they give example of some really bad kings in England who were really demoniac. And they said democracy is really good because everybody gets a voice. But then they say that actually it's only good for those people who can rule themselves. He says some people, they're not intelligent enough, they can't rule themselves. It's quite interesting what they say. He says for some countries it's not good, they said. But America, of course, everyone is so intelligent, you know, they say. They say. But actually you see the result of having Shudra and Vaishyas in control. Well, it's the age of Kali, so it has to be. Yes. You have democracy.
But it's still connected to monarchy.
Oh, it's still connected. Oh, really?
Yeah, forced election, and that government was removed.
Okay, so they do have some power still. The king has a little power that they can overrule the government. Interesting. In Australia. No, it's a democracy which is connected to the monarchy of England, like Commonwealth of States. It's a Commonwealth, right? Commonwealth, it means Australia, Canada, I believe. And they used to be under England, but then they became sort of independent, but they're still connected. They're Commonwealth, yeah.
When organized crime is legalized in the state.
Sankirtan Das says, when organized crime becomes legalized, it becomes a state. Most of the, what?
The armies.
Most of the armies.
Most countries have an army.
From the Vaishyas.
Few
Vaishyas. Yes.
They think they have democracy, but actually it's not a question.
Yes.
It's already decided.
Yes, and I was reading in my son's book, it even says that in the book. It says, you know, there's 400 representatives, there's 100 senators. But in the book it says, actually, only 30 or 40 people have power. Of all of those people. It says that. It says, this one, you know, he's like senior. And all the other ones, they have to go, if they want to make a law or something, they have to get it okayed by these other people. It said actually only 34 people are in power in the American government. Yeah, although they have this huge show.
They say there's 30 families governing the planet.
What's that?
They say there are 300 families governing the planet.
There are?
300
families. Who says?
Acha.
They carry the mind, wealth, and power.
Yes, that's true. It's true.
Yeah,
yeah. So actually, in America, it says right in the book on American government, which I was teaching my son. It's quite revealing.
Recently, election in America with Bush.
With Bush. Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Officially, he was not really chosen. Still, it somehow they got him in.
Yeah.
And now he's in. What is he doing?
Yeah.
Just acting it out in the interest of some.
Right, right. Yeah, there was some question. So corruption is there. Corruption is there. It's not integrity in the government. There's no. One time our devotees were getting involved in politics. Prashanta, can you move that tambura? It's getting wet. And Prabhupada was encouraging them. They were running for mayor of Atlanta. And then, but then it got to a point where Prabhupada said, no, you should pull out. This is too much contamination. You cannot act with, you cannot associate with these people. So he then, at one point, Prabhupada told them to stop. 300 in Melbourne, mayor. Acha. Where the politicians drink. When you're intoxicated, yes. That's a good point. You should get rid of the bar. Somebody said that in the, also in the Senate. They have a bar, you know, and where they make the laws, they have a bar too. In the American place. So.
Yes.
Where?
In Belgium.
Belgium. A church converted into a bar. This is the age of Kali. Pachi. The mafia guy became the priest. Yes. And downstairs there's gambling and all kinds of things.
And the mayor is
the mayor is the pope, the head of the church. Yeah, I know. Well, when I was going to church in America, I remember they had, it was okay. They had like gambling in the church. They had raffles. I don't know what you call it. You know, when you buy a ticket and then you win a prize.
Lottery.
They had lottery in the church. They had this also the same thing. In fact, when I was a teenager, then I was going for the sports activities in the church. They were having sports. So I thought that was pretty good. They had a basketball court. Volleyball court, and I thought it was, you know, material and spiritual side by side, right? There's none. Actually, it's non-different. It's material, actually. It's material. And when I was going, and then when I was 13, I was actually serious. And then when I looked at the people, and I said, I'm the only one that's serious. Nobody else is serious. So then I just left. You know, these people aren't serious about God. Anyway. But it's like that. They have lotteries, they have... And the prize for the lottery is liquor, you know. So it's quite... It's Kali. It's the Church of Kali, actually. It's not... what kind of church is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like in Russia, maybe it may not be appreciated by the people in the church, but in America, it's just like part of it. It's actually part of the, at least the Protestant church. I don't know about Catholic. Anyway, but these things are going on. It's Kali is in the government, Kali is in the church. Kali is everywhere, age of Kali. Only Prabhupada is giving some shelter and some protection, like Manu. He's giving some piety, some dharma. Everywhere else, it's all mixed up. You get some... Piety, you get impiety, all mixed together. You don't know what is truth. How do you know what is truth? Yeah, Namali.
So how we get under
the Kshatriyas and Brahmins.
Similarly, how we can implement this in ISKCON?
Well, you have to make the Kshatriyas devotees. Prabhupada wanted us to be Brahmins. He wanted to create Brahmins. And then everybody else can remain in their position, but they have to become Vaishnavas. It's not that we have to become Kshatriyas. Or Vaishyas, but of course many devotees do. I mean, whatever your nature is, you tend to do that. We see so many devotees who were Prabhupada disciples that, you know, for 10-15 years they'll just be like good Brahmins, and then after they go and start doing business, and they follow their nature. So,
they go in the military.
A lot of some of our Gurukulis, they go in the military. And,
Navy.
Yeah. But Prabhupada's idea was that we make the world, we make them to Vaishnavas, not that we have to do everything. But he wanted the judges and everybody to have tilak and become Vaishnavas. Yes, Mangopal. Oh, he did. Acha. Right.
What's that?
Gopi Pranadana Prabhu gave a seminar on the cooperation between Brahmins and Kshatriyas, focusing on this. This section. Yeah, it's very important. So many principles are here. How they used to visit each other. They weren't closed. Opposed to associating with each other. But you see how they associated. How were they? They were, one was, they were offering obeisances to each other, praising each other, saying, what can I do for you? Yes, this is influence of Kali. So this is the perverted caste system that we see in India. You guys, you just sit and do nothing the whole day. You're just reading and chanting. And the others are saying, oh, well, you're so passionate. You don't think, the Brahmins may say. Yeah. A symptom of? Kanishta Adhikari. Yes. Yes. We were reading that yesterday, that the second-class devotee, the Madhyam Adhikari, he respects, he makes friendships with devotees, and he's very compassionate to the innocent. Did you have your hand up a while back? Health, education and health. I'm Prime Minister. So her point was that Nalini Kanta, he did a presentation in the UK, and he asked 250 people who were just like coming to the temple. First time came to the temple. So he's doing a presentation of Vedic astrology, and he asked the people, what is the biggest problem in UK? And they said the biggest problem is education and health. So then he opened up the chart of the Prime Minister, Tony Blair, and these two things were a problem in his chart. Education and health. His two problem areas. They're all messed up. But all the planets for power were very strong. So you see, this is today's leaders, what they have, what is their qualification. They did something good in their last life to become in such a powerful position, but they don't have the qualification to actually help anyone as Kshatriya. They don't have idea what is Kshatriya, actually. They have no idea that they should be out in the front lines. They send the young teenagers out, or young boys, and they sit back in their comfortable place. Yeah.
I have one about Bush United States.
Oh, all the presidents. They did research on the IQ of the presidents.
And the Bush is the lowest.
Okay. There we go.
The Clinton is at the top and the Bush is the lowest.
Who is the top?
Clinton.
Clinton. Clinton.
Clinton. 190 and something. IQ. And Bush has less than 100.
Less than 100. Oh, 100 is... This is... Less than 100 means below average. I don't know. Anyway, okay, let's change the subject now. It's time to ask some different questions. Yes, Sankirtan.
Srila Prabhupada makes a point here, text 54.
54. Giving rise to so many interests. But I don't see, where's your...
It's about duties.
Right, duty of the responsible king. Where's rights?
At the end, the last sentence.
The last sentence. Because of giving rights to so many interests. Right. Well, everybody's satisfied. There's no disease. There's no mental agony. So what else do you want? You've got all your money, you've got your place, you've got your food. It's because everyone is being... It's because nobody's doing his duty and the king is... Nobody's responsible. The king is the last one. He's the responsible person. The Brahmins are responsible. These people are responsible. Grihasthas are responsible. Sannyasis, everybody's responsible. But in today's society, nobody's responsible.
Right.
Yeah, so therefore everybody's got a problem. Everybody's being neglected. As we heard, dharma, what is dharma? That here it says this 4:16:16, he'll be situated in truth, a lover of Brahminical culture, give all service to old men, shelter to all surrendered souls, giving respect to all. He'll always be merciful to the poor and innocent. So now the poor people, the innocent people, they're all it's might means right. So these are the people who, in modern society, they don't have any rights. The Brahmins, the old men, and the poor, the innocent. They're the least respected in today's society. Nobody cares what the old men say, or the poor people, or the innocent. Yeah. Yes, if the leader is in the mood of servant, then the people will also be. If they will feel so touched by the mood of a leader that they'll want to follow. They'll want to follow him. And everybody has to do their duty. Prabhupada said, unemployment, this is evil. Yeah, idle mind is devil's worship. So, yeah, but I see also, I mean, there is some idea like that in UK, and at least in UK, I was there, and one devotee had welfare, but they said she also had to work and show that she was also trying to work as much as she could, and they would make up the rest. Yeah. That she couldn't. In UK, it's like that, yeah. So that's a better system. Better system. Okay, yes.
Very small question.
No problem. Where are we? Gavaya. Oh, Gavaya. Yeah, yeah. Kind of a cow.
Because it's used to the hair in the chamber, but I always thought that was yak
hair. Yak hair. Gavayas. Chamaris. They're called chamaris. Chamaris. Gavaya. And you think that's a yak.
Well,
it could well be. It could well be. Yak tail fan, it said. So it's just another name. You look it up in the dictionary, maybe. You need a Sanskrit dictionary. Gavaya, chamari, and yak.
And those animals in that text,
you can put this one up too.
Are they all supposed to be pious?
Yes.
Because the mongoose,
he eats snakes.
So that's his power. He's in my room in the MVP last year.
Must be the one that visits me too.
I tried to get him out of the room and he just...
Oh, no. Well, he wasn't friendly to him. Okay. Another question? Any other questions or comments on the monarchy or democracy or anything like that? We'll hear more about it tomorrow.
I have a democracy, but
yes, they want. It's their idea.
They raised their hands, they voted.
They voted, yes. And Prabhupada said too, yes, it's true. In democracy, it's the people's fault. Because they're the ones that brought him in.
So the president Prabhupada said that. Away,
yeah?
No responsibility.
Yes. Madan Gopa. Oh, you watched the Mahabharata. Who is that? Bharat Maharaj? Normally you put it in, pass it to your own sons. This was the beginning of democracy. Yeah, he was supposed to be king, Bhishma. Well, it seems like they're always according to birth, usually. Usually it's the way they do it. Yeah, sometimes it happens. Yeah. Well, there is an aspect of democracy in monarchy also, just regular monarchy, because he has his ministers, the Brahmins. He has his assembly of Brahmins. Yudhisthira had his whole assembly of Brahmins. They were all these great, great sages that you hear about in Bhagavatam, Asita, Devala, all these people. Narada, they were all in his assembly. So just like in modern, like in America, they have the president and then they have the legislature kind of thing. So like in democracy, they have three. They have the legislature, they have the president, who's like the head, and then they have the judicial, the judges. So they have three different branches that are supposed to check each other. So in monarchy, they had the kings, they had the executive, but the king was also the judge. So judicial and the executive were together. But then the other side, the other part, were the Brahmins, and they had that actually in monarchy. They would listen. They wouldn't do anything independently of the Brahmins. He would present it to the Brahmins, and they would discuss, and they would say, "We advise that this is what you should do." So like that was there also in monarchy, that sort of democracy. Well, the checks and balances were there for the king. And we saw the Brahmins killed Vena. I mean, he was bad and they killed him, and then they brought another king in. And so that was there in the monarchy also. Anything else? Yeah. Yes, yes. Yes. Because of the corruption of the Brahminical order, Kali entered in Sringi, in the Brahmin boy who cursed Maharaj Pariksit. So that's how Kali entered. And he's saying that history repeats itself, as we see in the Western governments also, that the Brahminical order becomes corrupt and then the others follow. The fish rots?
From the head.
Oh, the fish rots from the head. Okay, the head first. Bengali proverb. that when the fish starts rotting, the head rots first.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Yes, yes. All Bengalis love fish. So for them it's a very important proverb. What did he say?
Water cucumber.
Okay. Next, all right, enough. Next comment or question, we were going to change the subject again from fish to something, Krishna, hopefully. Any more comments or questions on these verses? Very important for our understanding because we're meant to be advisors of the society. Yeah. Yeah, there will be more about, mostly about Brahmins, Kshatriyas, and Grihasthas. We heard about the Brahmacharis already. We heard a little bit about Brahmachari, yeah. And Sannyasi too, Sannyasis.
But it's not very much.
No, it's just, actually if you really want to know, then you go to 7th canto, the last 5 chapters. Yeah, it's not so much here. You can take it, but yeah.
On the
yeah, right.
So you can see actually that Krishna's controlling it all.
Right, Krishna's controlling. Yes. Yeah, Krishna's controlling. If you surrender, if you're a devotee and you surrender to Krishna, and that's why Maharaj Yudhisthira, his kingdom was so wonderful, because Krishna was actually in control. He was giving his kingdom to Krishna. He was offering the whole kingdom to Krishna. So therefore, that's why there was cooperation with the elements, the trees, the creepers, the hills, because they're all part of Krishna. And they wanted also to participate in the kingdom of Maharaj Yudhisthira. They also wanted to be elevated in that kingdom. Yeah.
For example,
we have to act in the mode of goodness.
Do our part, and then we can really realize all Krishna's arrangements in our life.
See Krishna's arrangement.
Provided we do our part.
Provided we do our part, and that means... Yes. Yes, actually that was the, there's this little calendar for all the days of the week, of the year, and the quote was a few days ago that Srila Prabhupada said that, he says, why do you say you have some obstacles? He says, yes. I can kick out these obstacles with one kick of my foot if you follow my guidance.
If you accept
my guidance. Yes?
To Krishna
Das, yeah. Yeah, so one kick of my foot and all the obstacles are gone. So we just have to accept the guidance of the pure devotee, of the spiritual master. We have to do our part. Prabhupada said initiation's beginning, but if you don't follow, then it's a farce, it's a joke. You don't actually follow after initiation if you don't follow what you're supposed to do. Well, it's nice that he's thinking of Krishna.
That's the part.
Yes. If somebody's in Maya then and he's thinking of Krishna, then he's not that much in Maya.
Prabhupada said, don't blame your Maya on Krishna.
Don't blame your Maya on Krishna.
Because people are not faithful on Krishna.
Oh, because people are not faithful to Krishna, there's drought. Yeah. From the top. Okay, we'll stop here. All glories to Shiva.